It's a True Faith podcast. You've got myself, Alex Hurst, and Norman Riley to talk to you about yesterday's draw. Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle United 0, and we doubled our points total for the season. I think that's the most positive way of looking at it. You know, me and Norman, we're going to talk about the result. Mike Ashley turning up with the fellow horseman of the apocalypse yesterday at Crystal Palace's first game in 18 months. We're going to talk about who played well, who played badly, what we need to do better, and all sorts of things, and where we are in the relegation battle picture, which you could argue, and I think me and Norman will talk about whether we're in that or not. So Norman, first of all, do you have a good day yesterday? We were both at the match and met you down there. Was your day a positive one?
It was excellent. I had a cracking day. You know, just the usual of getting to see mates, have a few beers with them. A few, you know, that's probably underselling it. Like a few times three, maybe. But that was all good. I thought the atmosphere pre-match was really good. The Crystal Palace tactic of having the kind of outdoor open bar area with pumping house music. If it hadn't been the fact that it was great and chucking it through my rain, it would have felt like you were in some sort of weird bar in Ibiza. So you had like people like bouncing around, dancing. It was pretty good fun. And also, much like last season, a fellow student from my program, a young American, she wanted to go to a football match, and she says, I got her a ticket, and she absolutely loved it. Despite, for us, it was like, you know, the kind of formulaic day out, not a great performance, we got drunk, good crack. But for her, it was like the first time she's done it, and she absolutely buzzed off. And for me, that was almost as pleasurable as being there, because you think, you know what, that reminds me a little bit of what it can be like sometimes. So all in all, a pretty good day, and safely tucked up in bed by 10 o'clock at night, because I'm an old man, so there you go.
Yeah, we had a good day as well. We got the bus from Newcastle, left at 5 a.m. and didn't get there because of traffic, because of the weather, whatever, because of the fucking air show that was on somewhere down south. And didn't get back till 2 a.m. So, yeah, a 21-hour day. But yeah, it was good crack with the lads. We're going to have some footage from that bus journey and some other stuff on the True Faith podcast YouTube channel. Check it out. Link will be in this podcast. And you know, it's always fun going to watch Newcastle play away from home, and then potentially sometimes the football starts and that fun stops for 90 minutes. But let's get on to the result, Norman. A good result for you. Did you come away from Selhurst Park feeling more positive than negative yesterday?
Yeah, I did. You might disagree, but more positive, maybe not in the sense that, oh, you know, we've turned the corner, because it was a kind of pitiful 0-0 performance. But at the same time, I didn't, like, not losing yesterday was the most important thing for me, because Palace are one of those sides that, and especially based on yesterday's evidence, they're going to be doing there with us and the other teams who are doing nothing other than battling to stay in the Premier League. I would put probably, in terms of personnel, Palace slightly above us. They've got a better squad and better players, but we're capable of matching them just because we've got a much better manager. So I take it as a positive. A clean sheet away from home, you know, the defence has been absolutely fantastic this season. I think we saw evidence of that again yesterday, despite, as we'll go into, I'm sure, Palace's missed opportunities. It was okay. We'll analyse the attacking performance, I guess. But all in all, a point for me is good's a hard word. A point is a decent result, let's say.
I mean, I agree mostly that you've got to say Crystal Palace wouldn't be in relegation trouble this season, you'd think. So a point and a clean sheet away from home, away in the Premier League to most teams, is very good. And despite some late pressure, Dubravka's not really had to pull off any saves. A couple of hairy moments, obviously, the open goal miss from Sago. I think that ball was out.
I've seen it since. It was out, yeah.
The match of the day commentator said it didn't, the whole, but it was out.
It did, I mean, go out.
The linesman was nowhere near the ball. He was kind of on his heels a little bit. He had real problems in the second half yesterday, that linesman, right in front of the away stand as well, which probably didn't help his cause in terms of feedback. But apart from that, I think it was a defensively resolute performance. We're going to get into the positives and stuff like that a bit later on, but back to the result, it's one of those. I mean, as an away fan, you aren't cheering at the final whistle, or it doesn't matter whether you're in the ground or not. You're kind of relieved it's over. It's you know, a draw's a draw, a point's a point. It gets us back on the board after Cardiff, and you know, we've played two teams outside of the top six this season in the league, and we haven't conceded a goal, which isn't a bad thing. There's also the issue that we haven't looked like scoring, which I suppose I'll get onto later in the programme. But overall, a decent point that sets us up. Now we play Man United in a couple of weeks at Old Trafford, and that is the only side from the top six that will play from now to Boxing Day when we go to Liverpool. So it sets us up for this little kind of mini crucial run of games. I think it was 12 games before this game at the weekend, so there's 11 games left now. Take out Man United, that's 10 games to get, you know, a maximum of 30 points for, and you'd really be looking for kind of 15 to 18 points, I think, to get us into the new year. And again, you know, that tough run of games that we had at the start of the season, it's replicated later on, I think, in January. So we really start to have to start winning games and picking up points very, very soon. And a point in a clean sheet away from home at Crystal Palace is not the worst platform to do that on. Before going to the specifics of the game, Norman, bit of a turn up for the books yesterday. Mike Ashley was at his first game in 18 months with his, I don't even know what to call him, his employee, his supplier to Newcastle United, Keith Bishop, his, I don't know, advisor in Justin Barnes, and is the bloke that runs allegedly Newcastle United from Lee Charnley, wrote the game. I didn't know they were at the game, but then the veracity of the Ashley out chance kind of gave it away a bit, and you kind of thought, is he here? Because it was so regular. And then, you know, Lee Ryder's written some good stuff for the Chronicle since then, trying to explain things a bit, and he says Mike Ashley was there and had a long meeting, although he didn't speak to Rafa, shock. He was there and had a long meeting with Lee Charnley to gather the mood about the club. If I was Mike Ashley, I would have just cancelled that meeting after hearing the abuse and the songs that he got yesterday. Quite a few, you know, when Ashley sells the club, we'll have a party. If Ashley dies, we'll have a party, which is very nice. But who am I to comment on such claims?
I don't remember that one, but by God, that's strong.
That's what Mike Ashley does. He pushes good people to their absolute limits with the lies and the ways run the club. Obviously, we don't advocate anything like that at the True Faith podcast. Would rather he just fucked off and sold the club and took loads of money away with him. So it's like everyone would win, but you know, that's not new to anyone listening. So why do you think he turned up yesterday? No, obviously we're speculating here, but is there any significance to you, and how do you feel about it?
I've absolutely no one has no idea about what goes on. Mike Ashley said, I mean, part of me thinks he turned up just because he fancied a fucking wind up. You know, and Bishop said, oh, how about Mike? You know, the club that you own, just in case you forgot. You know, that football club that you own. Oh, they're playing in London, so fancy popping along. You know, not quite in a broad Geordie accent, you know, and he's kind of that slithery PR accent that he's no doubt refined over the years while sat in his little throne and his little shabby shithole in Soho. I don't know. I mean, maybe he went to Palace because, you know, they're formerly owned by Simon Jordan, and there's a bit of a kindred spirit there. He just wanted to go and pick up on the you know, the vibes. Because Simon Jordan, like Ashley, is an absolute bag of shite. It's a very odd one. And like you say, I hope that he's woken up this morning and thought, dear me, I've really, really done this poorly. Look what I've done. People are singing these songs about us. I need to take a bit of time and, you know, go through a bit of introspection just to see where I've gone wrong. But it just won't happen. He literally won't care. He just won't care. He's, as I say, he's got like sort of serious narcissistic personality tendencies. And I think he probably part of him would have enjoyed that yesterday. Put it this way, in the news this morning, he's closed down three branches of House of Fraser. So he literally doesn't give a fuck about anyone or anything other than himself. So it's an absolute mystery to me, mate. A perverse sense of enjoyment that he was being sung at in those terms. He probably got a masochistic kick out of it. I don't know what's your take on it.
I agree with you in terms of that last point. I mean, it's a weird, strange position to find yourself in as a person to be loathed as much, and then, like you say, to have no ability to think, well, is it me?
Yeah.
Is it me? Like, is it my fault, or is it all those nasty people, or all those tens or hundreds of thousands or millions of people around the United Kingdom who don't like Mike Ashley in his pursuit for ever growing riches? And who would want to sit there and listen to that for 90 minutes on, I presume, what is a day off? you know, because he doesn't put any work in at Newcastle United, so there's no work involved in this alleged meeting that took place. It's like, would you really have to go down to Crystal Palace to get a feel from Lee Charney? Why don't you just fucking ring him and find out what's going on? Or why don't you stick your head, you know, or take your head out of your arse for 5 minutes to see what the hell's happened to Newcastle United and why? I think the fact just they were kind of all four there, and it's like a little bit like bogeyman type thing. So there's been so much talked about Justin Barnes and who is he? Does he have a direct role at Newcastle United? All this kind of stuff. For him to kind of appear with him at a match like that alongside Bishop, who everyone knows and dislikes. Charney's there, obviously. I think he goes to every game home and away. It was almost a little bit like, you know, in my mind, I want to equate that to the protests. I want to say that the protests are working, they're having an impact, and this is one of Bishop's terrible PR ploys. Like, we'll go to a match, that'll show them that we're not going anywhere, and to stop the protests, because, I mean, if you look at some of the stunts they've pulled in the past, they do think that on those simple lines. But like you correctly said at the start, no one knows. It might have had nothing to do with anyone. Maybe he wants to build a sports direct, like on the side of Crystal Palace. Maybe that was the crowd. I don't know.
Can I jump in there, Alex? Sorry.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting that happened yesterday on the very day that the Times released that really, really good excerpt of from Keegan's autobiography, in which, you know, Keegan's basically completely critiquing the whole model. Keegan saw what we came very quickly to see within a couple of years of Ashley. Keegan saw it like almost straight away, didn't he? In that article yesterday, I thought was brilliant and really insightful. And it's just interesting. I think I put a tweet out yesterday saying, like, you think as a businessman, somebody who has made millions allegedly through, you know, business nous. It almost, like, everything he does almost makes me think every day. He's just been lucky. He hasn't got any great acumen in the business world. He's just a lucky bastard. He made his millions through what I'm guessing must be luck. You know, just one thing went right for him, and all of a sudden he's got all this money, and now he just goes around hoovering up vulnerable firms, like the kind of hedge fund manager that he is. And you think he's managed to, as I say, ostracise Keegan and Shearer, and basically cut off Rafa. These three absolute heavyweights in the world of football. If you were like a businessman, you'd just be thinking of, God, how lucky am I? I've got these three people who want to be part of this club, who want to go and work on behalf of this club. These three people can make me an absolute bucket load of money. And he's completely cut them all off. And you just think, how, in what way is that the kind of behaviour of somebody who has business acumen? Am I missing something here?
No, you're not, and it goes back to the idea that in his head, is it all the fans' fault? Is it everybody else's fault that Newcastle are rubbish and not his? I say rubbish, but you know what I'm mm-hmm. getting at. The saddest thing about Mike Ashley is that he could wake up, like you say, today and just fix it. He could just fix it. He could go and see Rafa Benitez. He could take some fucking time. He could use a helicopter. I don't care. Get up here, however you want to get up here, and say, Rafa, I need to see you today. And say, right, okay, I'm going to give you complete operational control of football matters at Newcastle United. We are going to set aside some money of the club's own money, or we're going to get a mortgage or whatever on improvements or a new training ground, and we're going to employ people who work well with the fans and have the best interests of Newcastle United at heart. We're going to fuck off Keith Bishop, unless he wants to work with, like, the players doing positive stuff for the local media to allow fan engagement. Those things are eminently possible and can be solved today. Mike Ashley's issue at Newcastle United is solvable. It's not unreversible, despite the hatred, despite what we all think. And that happened with Rafa Benitez. And if you... sorry, just losing my voice here. If you look at what happened with Keegan and Shearer, and then the return to the almost the football club in 2016-17 in the Championship, when we packed out the grounds, when you couldn't get tickets for home games against Bristol City and against Fulham and the like, compared to now where you can get tickets for any game against big sides, it that proved that it is possible. But once again, we took 35 steps back after a couple of tentative steps forwards, and that's the saddest thing. And on top of that, he could just reduce the price of the club to a reasonable amount And he could just go and he could have loads of money for it and he could get his money back or most of it and just piss off and do something else and go back to House of Fraser or Denham's or Sports Direct or Goals Soccer Centre or all the other businesses that you didn't know he owned. But yeah, we should probably get back to talking about football.
That's the thing, isn't it, with him? He's like, he's so enigmatic and incredibly ridiculous as a human being that we could literally sit here completely neglect the match and just talk about Mike Ashley for a good, I would say a good 5 or 6 hours straight off the bat. But there you go, let's not do that.
This show is sponsored by our patrons who pay £5 a month for about 25-30 extra podcasts, and also keeps this podcast free. We do a show bi-weekly or bi-monthly called TF Any Questions, where we ask any questions that fans ask, and the kind of range from football to other matters. And one of the questions this week, Norman, you did the show, it was a great show, was what would you do? What's the first thing you'd do if you found out Ashley had sold the club? What was your answer? Or what is your answer?
What was the first thing I'd do? Did I answer that question? Because I don't recall. Remind me.
Oh, you did. Just say, you can just tell the listeners now, what would you do? if you heard tomorrow morning that Mike Ashley was gone, what would you do?
I'd have a party. what would I do? I mean, I probably, where am I now? I'm sat at me gaff in Lewisham. This may be a different answer than the one you got in Friday, by the way. If I found out Mike Ashley sold the club, I'd probably phone him, work sick, pretend I was ill, get on a train back to Newcastle and join the ranks, the massed ranks, you know, at St. James's Park, just hugging and drinking and kissing each other, basically. Is that a good enough answer?
That's a great answer. I'd probably record a podcast.
What was my answer on Friday?
I can't remember. It was a great show, though, but it was definitely one of the questions. I think it was very similar. It involved alcohol and hugging and kissing.
Hugging and kissing. Just kissing random strangers, you know what I mean? Like, but not in a weird, creepy way, because, you know, that's disgusting. But we'd all just be in the middle of Newcastle, all happy, grown men, and hugging and crying. That's what it would be like, mate. It would be like... It would be like the end of a dictatorship. In fact, I can only assume it would be like exactly what it was like when when Franco died in Spain. That's exactly what it would be like, I'm sure.
Right, back to the football. That's why everyone listens. Okay, let's talk positives. Norman, yesterday, who played well?
There was one standout performance. It was Federico Fernandez. I thought he was excellent. I thought that for every game he's played in, he's a leader. He bosses the back line. He's more vocal than Jamal Lascelles, I think. This is the kind of, maybe the third match I've seen him in now where he's been doing more of the talking at the back. You know, in and around the club, it's quite obvious that Lascelles has got a lot of respect. Although, you know, I think Lascelles has been a little bit quieter this season. That's the impression I'm getting in anyways. Whereas Fernandez seems to just, he just knows the game, doesn't he? He reads the game well. He knows how to manage a back line. He's tackling, he's timing. The timing of his tackles is absolutely fantastic. And also, he can play the ball out really well. He can play the ball out, he can pick a pass. And I think we saw all of that yesterday. So he was head and shoulders. In fact, I don't think anyone in a Newcastle strip, maybe, you know, you can take Dubravka out of the equation because he wasn't really tested. I don't think anyone got anywhere near Fernandez yesterday. I think he was quite obvious our standout performer.
Totally agree, and one of the things which impressed me most was his ability to cover the fullbacks on both sides was fantastic. Mm. He recognises danger and reads the game a bit like, you know, Lejeune is also very good at this. Mm-hmm. And kind of at any time, we're going to talk about Yedlin in a bit, but Yedlin was so successful yesterday against Sahar that he basically gave up with that left hand approach and switched him to the right to have a go at Dummett. And Sahar or the young left back for Palace did get behind him a couple of times when on counter attacks, rare counter attacks for Palace because they had most of the ball, and Fernandez came over and two or three slide tackles in front of the away end which were absolutely perfect. And there's something about on a soaking wet day, your centre back just cleaning out a player and getting the ball right in front of the away end or right in front of the home fans, which is which is beautiful to watch. Titus Bramall was actually very good at it. he times his tackles so well. Like you say, he's a leader. He was a little bit lax in possession, playing out once or twice in the second half, but he wasn't the only one. That's probably more due to the fact that the midfield was so deep, it's difficult to pick out the right pass. But Yeah, and it's £6 million. Questions asked again, why didn't we have him in for the start of the season? He's clearly supplanted Clark. Shaw didn't make the bench yesterday. As the first choice centre back in Lejeune's absence. And it's just a really, really good bit of business by the club and by Rafa. Obviously he managed him before at Napoli. £6 million just looks like a complete steal again. And you look at our defence, £5 million for Yedlin. Pete is fantastic value. Dummett cost nought. Though you could argue he's like the only academy product we've had in like the Ashley era, apart from Carroll, who kind of predates Ashley's time from the academy. Lascelles £3 million. It's just what a back four we've got for the price that we're paid. I'd rather we're paid like more money for players, because I mean we're a proper football club, but we're not at the minute. But yeah, totally agree with you on Fernandes, and I've got a lot of faith in the back four at the minute.
Yeah.
Anyone else for you?
I thought in the first half it was quite obvious that Shelby was back in the side. Obviously, obvious in the sense that you can see him and he stands up. But in terms of how the team played, you know, I just thought that he's this season Shelby's kind of control, his movement on the pitch, and his determination are just like that almost come into like a kind of pinnacle. It's almost like he, as I see, had that kind of epiphany post Christmas last year, and he's just turned into a really mature, quality Premier League midfielder. And we saw flashes of that in the first half. Second half, like, you know, much like the rest of the side, he was almost not involved in the game. But he was a boon seeing him back. And also, like you say, Yedlin, I thought, handled Zaha very well. Zaha was, I mean, even Hodgson said after the match, didn't he? He said that Zaha was just having a quiet day. And I like the pelters that came Zaha's way as well when Fernandes took that tackle, and Zaha complained about it, and he got loads of pelters from the fans, and he just gave like a little cheeky smile, which was a nice two-way kind of interaction between fans and a player of an opposition club. There was nothing malicious in it. It was just like, yeah, we know what you're doing, we're going to tell you. And then he kind of acknowledged it by giving that smile. It was a really lovely moment. Who else? Let me think. God, mate, I'm really struggling here. And the first half, Richie didn't have much of the ball, but I thought his off-the-ball work was really, really, really good. I'm really clutching at straws here, aren't I? And let's see who else. I think Dummett was okay. I think he kind of, yeah, Zaha got behind him a couple of times, but I think he handled him well enough. And apart from that, dear me.
Let's talk about Yedlin.
Yeah.
Because this is Yedlin's biggest task of the season against the Palace's best player. And if you keep Wilfried Zaha quiet, Palace don't score a win. It's fact. And I thought he handled him superbly. I thought that, he got the booking near the end of the first half and hit the post from that kind of overhead free kick, which is the best chance of the game. And I just thought he handled Zaha really, really well. He kept up with him pace-wise, which was always going to happen. And there's probably no bigger compliment than Zaha being switched flanks. Remember, Yedlin's on a booking second half. We're all worried, thinking, shit, you know, that if he gets past him, he can't touch him. But it was an interesting tactical change, Norman. When Yedlin got the booking, essentially when Zaha was going up against Yedlin one-on-one, it basically meant Richie was almost playing as a second right-back when they were in possession, so that Richie was the first person that Zaha had to get past, so that if you had to bring him down. So it was a quite smart and clearly pre-planned tactical change from the manager and the team, which worked really well. And yeah, it negated Richie completely second half. As an attacking threat, although a good header for that Hosslew transfer. Going to talk about Hosslew and Rondon in a bit, but I just thought it's a real tick there in Yedlin's career, in Newcastle career to date. That this, you know, if you look back to the McLaren game, the 5-1, would it have been Yamat who played? But I think Zaha might have been on the other side that day when Bolasie played against. I can't remember. It was a long time ago, and I obviously have tried to forget about it for good reason. You look at the comparison compared. To then, to now, it was just a really positive performance by Yedlin, and I think he deserves all the credit in the world for keeping Zaha quiet. And you know, I wanted to kind of talk about it later, but we may as well talk about it. But I thought Mariner was really, really poor again.
Terrible, terrible. All the officiating yesterday was fucking shocking, to be honest with you. I thought.
And in the first half, Palace kept getting given free kicks in and around our penalty area. And it was frustrating to watch, and I thought we were a little bit naive and were wised up second half. But I mean, the one where Dubravka makes a decent save and kind of fists it away that you wouldn't expect them to you know, fail there, to let it in. That just, Zaha skipped past a couple of players, backheeled the ball and just fell into Modiame. So Zaha didn't even have the ball. And to give a free kick there was just absolutely scandalous. And it was happening time and time again. I haven't seen that many highlights. We're at the other end of the pitch to where this was happening in the away stand. But I just thought he was more than happy to dish up free kicks to Palace players. What basically the likes of Townsend, Van Aanholt, Zaha, all Palace's lads, what they do is they kind of, because they've got lots of pace and Newcastle sit defender deep, they run around the edge of the penalty area, often going sideways, not forwards, and it looks quite good, but it gets frustrating, and then they realise there are no options because we're good at defending and we've got that many bodies back. So they just fall over. And Mariner bought it almost every single time, and it was very, very frustrating. I thought he was really poor.
Townsend, by the way, just a quick note about Townsend. Townsend gave the type of performance yesterday that he gave at Tottenham, and one of the reasons why Pochettino got rid of him. He was just that kind of headless chicken driving with a ball and not actually doing anything with it, poor end product, etc., etc. And Townsend, it's one of those for me where I genuinely think that regardless of how poorly run Newcastle under Mike Ashley, if he decided to stay that season in the Championship, I think not only would he have had a blinding season in the Championship under Rafa, he would have been in the England squad even though he was in a division lower. He would have come back and he would have been brilliant last season. Like, that 10-game spell under Rafa was probably the best of Townsend's career on a consistent basis. And for me, he's just one of those players who's got like a God-given talent. He's completely wasted it by being in a club where he's not going to get the kind of the management that he'd get under someone like Rafa Benitez. I just wanted to make a note. I don't know what you thought of his performance yesterday. Was it one of those where you thought, yep, there's a player who's just not realising what he's got?
I couldn't agree more. And it was the same at St James's last season, at the same down there at their place, where the first 5 minutes you see him on the ball and your memory clicks into gear like, shit, Townsend's really good play, he's going to do a lot of damage. As the game goes on, you just forget about him. Because he needs really well coached, and he needs clear and defined roles, what his job is in the team and what he's supposed to do, and he just doesn't have it. Now, the problem that he's got at Palace is that he's clearly, in the first half, Palace's only game plan was to get the ball left to Van Aanholt and Zaha. That was it. Nothing through the middle, nothing down the right, nothing, just nothing. And that's probably difficult for Townsend to deal with, and then he gets switched flanks, not because he is doing anything badly, probably, but because Zaha isn't doing anything well. So that's an issue, but yeah, it's a massive shame for him. I'm sure he makes lots of money and is very happy. He's a Premier League footballer, but if he'd have stayed at Newcastle, two things would have happened. If he'd have stayed at Newcastle when we were relegated, A, he'd have become a cult figure with the fans, an absolute hero. He'd have scored goals for fun. And Matt Ritchie did very well, and Matt Ritchie's a good, solid player for Newcastle and very popular, so we might not have bought Matt Ritchie, who was so important, but Andros Townsend would have taking the piss out of the Championship. He'd be doing talkings in 20 years' time, coming back here, making money off that. He'd be a club legend by now, and I agree with you. He'd be in the England squad. He'd have played at the World Cup. He'd have played at Euro 2016. So his loss.
Hi.
Zaha, though, that image you alluded to before, where Zaha came and had like a three or four, well, that's an exaggeration, but a long chat with the linesman because Fernandes had the temerity to tackle him. It was the same in the second half on the other side, when Zaha went through, and I think it was Yedlin put a really good tackle in, someone put a really good tackle in on Zaha. Perfect tackle, no question of it being a foul. And the home fans and Zaha were like up at the ref and kicking off, and it's just like, the other team is allowed to tackle you, lads. I appreciate that, you're probably used to, in a Brighton sense, getting a lot of penalties for very little, but the other team is allowed to tackle you, and it's like, What could Zaha have possibly been saying to the linesman there? He's not allowed to tackle me. He's running too fast. Have you seen the weather? He might hurt me. Like, get on with the game. Imagine that you're trying to chase 3 points in an important home game. And Palace haven't scored a home goal this season, remember, which we're going to come on to. I just thought it was a bizarre moment. And you know how normally when players try and talk to officials or particularly linesmen, they just get told to fuck off? You will just see linesmen repeat over and over again with the hand motion, go away, go away, go away. Why is this linesman like taking time out of the game to speak to Wilfried Zaha? It makes no sense. And then you've got Hodgson coming out after the game saying Zaha's performance was affected because of things he said in a press conference last week. Bizarre.
Do you want to hear my my dream plan for officiating in the Premier League. Right. So a little bit off topic, but basically what I think, right? I think that when people come out of like the military, I'm talking like, you know, like the paras and the Royal Marines, right? When they come out, they should like there should be a program to retrain them as Premier League officials. So because they've got like the kind of, you know, they've got the aura of having served in like special forces, and they've also got the confidence that goes with that. I mean, you know, you've got military in your family. You know how like these blokes carry themselves. I mean, they're not frightened of anything. And I don't think like a footballer on 100 grand would be screaming in their faces. I don't think it would kind of kill them at all. And it would just be a brilliant thing for people going to the military. There you go. And that's my business plan. I don't know what people think. Any politicians listening? Please feel free to get in touch, and I'll write it up for you. There you go.
You're hoping it's going to be like encoded into law.
Absolutely. It should be a law, mate. It should go into Parliament and be debated. I'm up for it. I'm running on a platform next year as a politician, and that's me. That's my policy.
Vote Norman. Okay. Very quickly, I have to give a plug to the next True Faith Supporters Forum. 11th of October. Still time to get tickets. About 130 sold so far. We're selling 200 this time. Get yourself along. All of the money goes to charity, plus a small booking fee, which goes to the website, not us, Eventbrite. And yeah, help come raise money for charity here. David Conn of The Guardian, talk about Mike Ashley, Sports Direct, Newcastle United. Here, Jay McKenna from Spirit of Shankly, Liverpool Supporters Union, about what Liverpool did regarding, you know, getting rid of their ownership and what they think Newcastle fans can do to take the fight to Mike Ashley. You also got excellent local journalists in the shape of Simon Bird, George Colkin, Luke Edwards, and we've also got, you know, several other guests speaking from the Magpie Group, from NUST. And get yourself along. We're going to take questions on the night. They've always biased, of course, but I think they've been excellent events in the past. People have taken a lot from them. They've been hugely popular. So come along, help us sell the event out. There's going to be raffles on the night as well, various prizes. All the money goes to charity. So do a good thing and have a good night about how to take the fight to Mike Ashley. Okay, so Norman, let's crack on with the podcast. I'm going to kind of put to you what didn't impress me and why. Maybe talk a little bit about, I'll move up the running order, about where it leaves us in the season and the relegation picture. I am very concerned, and probably more concerned than I've been at any other point under Rafa, about our inability to create chances. Now, yes, I get it. You look at Spurs, we created enough chances to win the game. We should have won the game, in my opinion. Unlucky not to get a draw, and probably bad finishing on our part, and poor defending cost us the game. You know, Man City and Chelsea, unlucky not to get a draw, probably a deserved draw against Chelsea. We've created very little, kind of scored our only chance. Arsenal, we hardly had a chance of note while the game was live. Man City away is Man City away. The three big games that worry me now, Nottingham Forest away, rotated team, but a poor performance. Nottingham Forest away, Cardiff away, poor performance. Should have won the game at the end, but if you look at the chances, quick, we had a lot of shots and we're better in attack against Cardiff than any other team. Then Cardiff have just been done five by Man City at home yesterday. Cardiff away and now Palace away. We haven't had any sustained pressure, I feel, in any of those games. We haven't really worked the opposition goalkeeper in any of those games. And I'm just starting to get a little bit concerned, Norman, that we are going to be really short in an attacking sense. Now, over the summer, we talked on podcasts for our patrons about what we'd like to see for the new season ahead. And one of the main things is we didn't score enough goals last season. Now, that's not Rafa's fault. That hasn't been sorted. I'm sure he would have loved to sign an array of attacking talent on a reasonable budget, but wasn't given the opportunity to. So, Norman, your take on it, because I'm looking at the league table now. And again, I've moved this up the running order, just for your information. I'm looking at the league table, and you've got the teams you'd expect to be below us in terms of Huddersfield and Cardiff, who I think will be below us all season, below a lot of teams. And then looking above us, you look at the likes of Burnley, won 4-0 yesterday. Fulham, again, Fulham had a much, much easier start than us, and have only got 3 points more. Southampton, Brighton, kind of the only teams you'd think would be in the relegation picture. Simply, are you as concerned as I am about our inability to score goals? Because I'm starting to think we're aiming very much so for fourth bottom now, and I'm almost struggling to see too many teams above us who are definitely going to finish below us now the season started. Your thoughts?
I broadly agree with you. I'm really, yeah, you're right. It's the sustained pressure bit that you mentioned there. We're not in none of the games that we've played so far. And there's an argument that the opposition in four of them have been very, very high quality, and it was always going to be difficult. But usually in a match, you'll get like a 5 or 10, 15 minute spell, maybe once or twice in a match where, you know, you're getting the ball in the box. You've got players in the box. The keeper pulls up a couple of saves. You know, whatever, we just haven't had that. We haven't had it, and it is really worrying. You're absolutely right. Is it down to the players? Is it down to the tactics? I don't know. I suppose there's the argument that Shelvey was out for, three of those games, maybe? Two or three of the first six games?
But if you look at, you played at Cardiff and you played yesterday, it's only Forrest he didn't play out in terms of the games that... I'm almost discounting those games because it's fine and the tactical setup in all of those games, the fact that we're, apart from Arsenal, we nearly got something from all of those games against far, far superior teams. I've got no issue with that. It's the three other games that concern me far more.
I agree with you. I think what's quite clear at the minute is that we're actually missing Dwight Gayle. In the summer, I welcomed the signing of Rondon. And in an ideal world, we would have kept Gayle, but we didn't. And you're thinking, okay, well, Rondon, you know, he's probably a better player than Gayle. But he's not being given enough time on the pitch to show what he's capable of or to settle in. And I think that Gayle and Perez were working so well together last season that I'd almost rather have those two up front at the minute. I think we're missing Gayle's ability to get in behind defenders and to work the line and to kind of open up space for other players just through his kind of annoyance factor. So that's an issue, and unfortunately, I'm with you, mate. I'm with you. I'm very concerned that we don't have goals in the side. That's a big worry right now. We might finish the match against Leicester having banged in three and won 3-1 or 3-0. We might think, oh, what were we worried about? But you're right. At the minute, there is a concern. There's no 5 to 10 minute, as I say, 5 to 10 minute spell of pressure on the opposition, and you kind of think to yourself, when's that going to come, and where's it going to come from?
We are massive victims of the fixture list, of course. I mean, I mentioned Fulham there, and because people think Fulham have had a pretty good start of the season. I think they've got, 5 points from six games?
They've won one game, they've won one match.
Had the fortune, you could say, to play Palace at home, Burnley at home, Brighton away, and Watford at home. And it's those home games. So, you know, we've got, I mean, Leicester are not a bottom half side, but we've got Leicester next week, and it's that Brighton game after Man United, after the international break, will probably be massive. So I might be being a bit harsh because we're probably the only team in the league that hasn't had a bottom 10 side to play at St James's Park in front of our own fans to really have a go at and create some chances. So I'm kind of parking the concerns for now because we won't know until we've had maybe a couple of games against teams that you would expect us to win at home. But there's always the concern that these other teams have far better striking power than us, better goal scoring midfields than us, and ultimately they'll probably spend in January if they're in trouble. Whereas last season showed that we were in big trouble in January. We spent £0 apart from a couple of loan fees for players in terms of Kennedy, Martin Dubravka, and the Algerian lad, Slimani. Slimani, I completely forgot his name there.
Yeah, Slimani.
So it is a concern for me. Rondon's performance for me was a concern. Now, that might be entirely down to the fact he was injured, but I thought he was really immobile. I think he only had 17 touches. And twice, Shelvey played kind of the typical ball you'd expect Shelvey to play over the top, between the centre-back and the full-back to kind of stretch the play, move the team up the pitch. And I had a discussion with Adam at half-time yesterday, and Adam said, well, he's not Dwight Gayle. And it's true, he's not Dwight Gayle, but he is mobile. We saw Rondon at Manchester City have a tremendous performance, really good game, and managed to run in behind, but it just didn't happen yesterday. And when that doesn't happen, we look like a very, very ordinary side, and the ball keeps coming back, and it seems like we can't get up the pitch. And then you've got Jose Perez. Now, how much is Jose Perez missing Dwight Gayle? I thought Dwight Gayle's upturn in performances, although it didn't bring goals in our kind of golden patch last season after Christmas when we lost very few games, Perez kind of thrived off the space that Great Gale created him. Now, Perez got a lot of stick in the away end yesterday, I thought, and he was lax in possession. He lost the ball a few times. But at the end of the day, he's an attacking player who doesn't really get the ball in the box. And yeah, his finish was poor for probably our best chance, but that chance was entirely of his own making in terms of nipping the ball away from James Tonkins. So it's just, I'm trying to think where the goals are going to come from. I thought Hosslew did really well. Probably Hosslew's best performance yesterday when he came on in the second half. He was mobile. Mm-hmm. He won the ball. That overhead kick was sensational. There was a couple of times he got away from a defender and miskicked the ball, which is kind of frustrating. But you know, your take on Rondon and Perez yesterday, do you think it was just injury issues that saw that performance from Rondon, or were you did you think Rondon had a good
game? I don't think he was as poor as what you think. He had very little to go off. But having listened to what you said there about those Shelvey balls, you're right. I remember them. With a bit more clarity now, and you're right, like they're the kind of balls that Dwight Gayle would have just been onto and Rondon should have. I'd like to think that it's just an injury, I really would. But also what we need to see, I think, is like a decision being taken on who's going to go up top with Perez, and it needs to be allowed to kind of grow for 5 or 6 games off the spin. So Gayle and Perez last season, it took them a while to click, but when they did, they were unbelievably effective. In this season, we've had kind of Hosslew Rondon. Perez hasn't had like a consistent partner, and I just think I'd like to see Rafa just say, you know what, this is me front two, and I'm going to stick with it for the next 5 or 6 games to see how it progresses. So whether that's Rondon or Hosslew, who knows? I'd rather have Rondon because he's a better player than Hosslew, I think. But there just needs to be a consistent front two getting to understand each other. What do you think?
I agree. I think that the first choice front two is definitely Perez and Rondon. I don't think there's any doubt in that respect. But Rondon's fitness is a concern. He missed the start of the season despite doing a full pre-season with West Brom. He obviously hasn't managed to feature in a couple of games since then, for whatever reason. And then he was off at half-time again yesterday. He didn't play him against Forest in the Cup to rest him, and it's just like, I don't think he came injured, but it just seems to me like Rafa's got a couple of concerns about his overall match sharpness and match fitness. Now, that might be totally, you know, normal and natural. He might have picked up an injury they don't want to tell us about. He may just take a little while to get going. It's a player that we don't know and don't know much about. But I would really like to see, to kind of contradict you a little bit in terms of you want to see Rafa stick with them, I would like to see Muto given a chance because he's fast.
You know what? Actually, Muto, I completely forgot about him.
Last season, and when we struggled, Rafa was very much keen on Hosslew up front. And he played Dwight Gayle with Hosslew sometimes, but he wanted the big man up front. And as things got a little bit more desperate almost, he kind of sacked that off, and then we started playing the two little men up front, Gayle and Perez, and it worked. So I don't know why Muto and Perez isn't an option, just to try and just give Muto a game at centre forward and think, you know what, like, let's see what you've got in that run. Those balls that Jonjo Shelvey's playing yesterday, they aren't just going out of play. They aren't looking stupid to everyone in the ground and everyone watching. Muto's on the end of them. I would just like to see it. And because, like we say, Perez worked so well, in my opinion, that might be, you know, looking for things that aren't there because of Gayle's pace in the space that Gayle's pace created for Perez. I mean, the Arsenal goal is a classic example. At home, we beat them 2-1. Ball over the top for Gayle, great touch. He moves the centre back out of position. Perez ghosts into the space and scores at the front post. That's just not happening this season. And I would like to see Muto given a chance. And it's a bit of a weird one. I mean, what, 9-10 million pounds? It's an absolute like nout really for an attacking player in the Premier League. But it's a small fortune for Mike Ashley's Newcastle United. And it's just strange that he isn't given more of a chance. And yeah, I'm clutching at straws here, but I just feel every time he comes on, he won the penalty at Cardiff. He kind of made a difference when he came on, I thought, against Arsenal. Like, he kind of dragged everyone forwards 5 or 10 yards. And then we'll put on that little bit of pressure at the end. And then yesterday, even, he just pushed Palace's defenders and he just rushed them a little bit compared to Hosslew or Rondon. And I would like to see him given a shot. Now,
I agree.
He didn't have a great game at Forest. Who did when he played there behind Hosslew? But I would like to see him given a go. But I think we'll, you know, I think if Rondon wasn't in the starting 11 for Leicester next weekend, some serious questions would have to be asked You know, Matt Ritchie's had an indifferent start of the season fitness-wise. He's great header yesterday from the free kick. He's still Matt Ritchie, and he obviously was given a defensive duty with Palace's attacking players, but we just have so little at the moment attacking wise, and kind of you almost fall into that trap of wanting to see other players play. Well, it might not be the players that are playing's fault that we're playing so defensively, or they're doing so little in the opposition part of the pitch. But yeah, it's back to the original question. It's a concern, and until we start scoring goals, it'll remain a concern. At the end of the day, you know, that team that put three past Chelsea on the last day of last season created several more chances. It's almost the same team, so they can do it. It's just when Rafa decides to kind of play a more attacking formation or certainly a more attacking mindset, which may well happen against Leicester next week or Brighton 3 weeks after that. But ultimately, we're going to have to start scoring goals soon. The team needs it. The fan base needs it. It's why you play football. And we'll look a million miles at the minute from being able to test goalkeepers regularly. But like I say, that might be because of the opposition and the fixture list we've had. We've been a huge victim of an absolutely brutal fixture list. And the fact that we don't find ourselves cut off is probably a good thing looking back. And, you know, we're still only a couple of wins away from the top half. And football changes pretty quickly, as we saw last season. So, Norman, to finish off, are you still confident of us avoiding the drop?
I am, yeah. We'll not get relegated. I'm still convinced of that. I think it's going to be a tougher season than last.
Who will finish below us?
I'll say Cardiff, Huddersfield, and I'll go for any of Southampton or Brighton. I think that's it. Even Fulham, to be honest with you, mate. I think I can even see Fulham getting sucked in because, as you say, they've had a pretty, you know, nice start to the season in terms of fixtures, and they've only had one win, and they're only, what, 3 points ahead of us? You know, we've got a better goal difference. We've got a better goal difference as well. They'll ship a lot more goals as us. Look at it down the bottom. Look at the goals columns at the bottom, minus. We're minus four, and we're third bottom. We've lost each game by one goal, and that for us, like, the defence... Defensively, we are fantastic defensively, and that's going to be hugely important. I think Watford will probably drop as well. Whether or not they'll finish below it, I don't know, but I think they'll drop. So I still think there's five or six teams who could quite feasibly finish below us. We just need to get on a run, pick up the points, get the confidence into the players, get the confidence into the fans, and we'll be all right.
Yeah, well, Watford, I agree they'll drop, but well, I mean, they've got 13 points already, so if you need, like, normally about 36 points to stay up these days... Yeah, they only need 23 more points from, like, 32 games.
So even if
they have an absolute, like, disgusting relegation form second half of the season, they'll still probably stay up. But, yeah, I agree. I'm always going to back Rafa in my ideal world and in your ideal world, Norman, I'm sure, and everyone listening. Mike Ashley releases some funds in January to buy some proper attacking footballers for the Premier League, and we crack on and have a really good second half of the season again. The reality will probably be different.
Well, he has one for you, mate. He has one for you. If we're kind of hovering around the bottom three or four when the January transfer window opens, or let's say mid-January, and Ashley starts to realise that actually relegation is a very real threat, do you think you release funds at all? Or alternatively, if we're actually comfortably out of the relegation zone and, like, and, you know, in sort of 10th, 11th or 12th, do you think Rafa's got less chance of getting money than, if you see what I mean? It's almost like, do we have more chance of him releasing funds if we're absolutely struggling in January? Or you just think either way, he's probably not going to release the money?
Yeah, you have to look at the summer and the fact that we made a £23 million profit. And according to Mark Douglas on Twitter last night, Rafa didn't want to lose Gale, but the financials meant that you had to suggest that we're not going to spend any money. We could be bottom of the league. We could be fifth. I just don't think so. I'd love to be wrong. And last season, I was convinced we'd spend money in January. Because we were in severe danger of getting relegated. Not only did we not spend money, we didn't even get our loans in. like to play in January. Like Kennedy's first game was February the 1st, and then Slimani and Dubravka didn't come in until like mid-February or late February. So it's just not only did we not spend money, and it's the same with this summer. Not only did we not spend any money, we brought in Muto and Rondon too late to play any pre-season games, in Fernandez after the season before the season started, but you know what I mean. I'm very pessimistic about that outlook, but you know what, we're wrong plenty, me and you, Norman, so could be wrong about this too. Okay, I think that's it for the True Faith podcast this week. We've got 50 minutes coming out of a 0-0 draw at Crystal Palace. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. If you like what you hear, try Patreon out. It's £5. We really appreciate it. It helps improve the show and all that kind of stuff. And hope to see you come along to the supporters forum 11th of October at the Irish Centre in Newcastle. Bring a mate, tell a mate, and it should be a good night. We'll be back for you next with the free podcast for after Leicester, Norman, which is a massive game. I was supposed to ask you about that, but I forgot. Just a quick look, a couple of quick words for you on that game.
Huge, of course. It's the game that we need. Oh, I hate to say it. We need to be looking to get in the win here, and we need I want to see a performance where, you know, chances are created. We bang in a couple of goals. We walk away from the stadium with the 3 points. The full time whistle guns. Lascelles comes over, claps the fans, as does Rafa. There's a good atmosphere in the stadium. Everyone's happy, and we think, you know what, that's it. 3 points of the bag, Man U. Let's write it off. It's irrelevant. And then we're going to really gun for it. That's what I want to see. I'll be up for it. It'll be a 100% worthwhile journey if on the train on the way back to Dune, we've got the 3 points in the bag. It's a big one.
Well said, and thanks for listening.